Hey there, I'm so pumped to tell you about an amazing new community I've launched called Grief to Growth Circle Community. It's a space for people who are grieving to come together to support each other and for people who want to know who we are, why we're here, and where we're going to have those conversations, all the things we talk about on the podcast. So I invite you to join me at grieftogrowth.com/community to become part of this compassionate crew. The best part is 100% free. And you have access to me in addition to everybody else in the community. In fact, the podcast will be there so you can talk about the things we talk about in the podcast right there in the community. There's also some premium content if you want to go deeper in the work I'm doing, but mostly it's about building relationships and community and about sharing resources and supporting each other. So come on over and check it out. It's grieftogrowth.com/community. I'll see you inside.
Hi there. Welcome to Grief to Growth Podcast. Your host is Brian Smith, spiritual seeker, best-selling author, grief survivor, and life coach. Brian believes that the worst tragedies of life provide the greatest opportunity for growth. Brian says he was planted, not buried, and he is here to help you grow where you've been planted by the difficulties in life. In each episode, Brian and his guests will share what has helped them to survive and thrive. It is his sincere hope this episode helps you today.
Hey, everybody, this is Brian back with another episode of Grief to Growth. And today I've got with me Francis Key, or Frankie Key. Just for everybody who doesn't know about my obsession with the team books, we're going to talk about a series of books called The Team, and we'll get into what that is. If you want to find out more detail about Frankie or about the team books, go back to episode 102, which was in December of 2020, December of last year. You can listen to that. I'm going to read a quick bio, then I will introduce Frankie and we'll get started. Francis Key is a scribe of a four-book series called The Team, A Mother's Wisdom from the Other Side. She began writing the books 19 days after her mother died, when she sensed her mother communicating important spiritual insights to her. She considers the true authors of the books to be her mother, Teddy Key, and the spiritual team that her mother rejoined when she died. The first book was received from Teddy, while books 2, 3, and 4 carry the energy of both Teddy and other teammates who came through to share their perspectives on life after death. Today, I want to discuss with her some of her concepts in book 4 and a couple other things. But with that, I want to welcome to Grief to Growth, Francis Key.
Hello. I'm so happy to be with you.
Yeah, it is really great to have you back again. As I mentioned in that quick intro, I'm obsessed with the team books. I've read a few books that I feel like have changed my life. I've read, which I think of some before, some books by a guy named Marcus Borg and C.S. Lewis. And there's a guy named Bernardo Castro that wrote Why Materialism is Baloney. There's been a few books that have really impacted me. And the team books are definitely among the books that have really changed my life. So you and I have known each other, I guess, for a couple of years now. I reached out to you after reading the books. And I wanted to have you back to discuss the concepts in book 4. But before we get into that, just for people that don't know, let's review, like, how did these books come to you? Because you don't consider yourself to be the author of the books.
Correct. As you said, 19 days after my mother died, I had an experience of communication with her. Should I move this down? Is this okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
Right, that's good.
All right. So a little background on my mother and myself. We were both, we were extremely close. She was on a spiritual journey and she took me with her in essence. She would go to different churches. She had left the Catholic Church, which she found to be not answering her questions. So As a child, I was taken to different places with her. She talked to me a lot about her inner search and my experiences with, if you want to call it psychic phenomena or mediumship or spiritual awareness, began as a very young child, I think directly because of her. Mm-hmm. And so I had no doubt that I would have some kind of connection with my mother. I'd had connection and dreams and visitations and things of that nature with other people who had passed, but I never dreamed that it would take the form that it did. So before she died at the age of 86, I used to tell her, Mother, why don't you write the story of your spiritual search? And each chapter would be a different concept. And she said, she would say, oh, no, I'm too old for that. I can't. I just couldn't do it. So I got her a tape recorder. I kept encouraging her, actually, to do something like that, but she never did. Mm-hmm. And she would say to me, well, why don't you try to sit and do that inspirational, I'll call it automatic writing, but it wasn't complete automatic writing where you have no awareness of who you are or what you're doing. But it was this very flowing inspirational writing. So she would say, why don't you try that anymore? And I'd always say, oh, I don't know. I don't feel called to do that. So lo and behold, the two, what she told me to do and what I suggested that she do came to pass in these team books. I never dreamed it would happen that way. I believed and trusted that I would communicate with her after she passed. But 19 days after she passed, I was on an airplane going to New York City to see my two daughters who lived there. I have four, but two lived there. I spoke to her in my heart, looking out the window at the beautiful clouds, which are always so inspiring, I'm sure, to everyone. And I said, Mother, is there any distance for you? And I heard her answer me. I heard her answer in my mind, but I hesitate to say I heard her audibly, but it felt audible as well. So she began to speak to me about where she was, about her perspective. I was asking questions and I started writing them down because I always have pen and paper with me. I'm just a writer, so I do that. And asking her and writing down what she was telling me. And at first I was talking to her about my personal grief and my regrets in my life and apologies to her about certain things of that nature. But then it just started to blossom. And within the 2-hour flight, it was all about so much more. So I thought this would be a one-time encounter on the airplane, but it turned out to be something that went on day and night, really, for over a year. The first book was written in 3 weeks. And by the way, because I released it so quickly, I'm in the process of doing some editing and correcting of it, but it has some typos. But I felt it was important to get it out there. First, I gave it to family and friends. And then people started asking for them. And I was printing them up, putting them in a folder, giving them away. And then I went ahead and did it through a company where people could order them on demand. So, but the writings continued, and I would handwrite everything in this big scrawl, and then I would sit and type it up. So it took a bit of time. The books came out every couple of years, and book four, it actually took about 4 years, 3.5 years to get that final one out. Because I had gone back to work, and so I didn't have this block of time to do, and it was kind of in bits and pieces. It took me longer to pull it all together. But book four, which you wanted to speak about today, she describes it as taking the lid off everything else and telling us not to cling to any of these teachings, thinking, oh, now I've got all the answers, but to use them to move further, because you can take any concept in these books, and most of them are in seed form, I call them, in book one. They're in seed form. And then there's so many layers of more information about every single one of those ideas and concepts. And I think that's what book four does. It's like book four is essentially, it's called Beyond the Team.
Right, right.
For that reason.
Well, I think it's interesting. Every time I talk to you, I learn a little bit more about your story, about your relationship with your mother. For people that don't know, you started doing automatic writing when you were a child. I mean, you wrote some things that were just so profound that we wouldn't expect to come from a child. And then I hear you say to your mother, okay, well, you should write this stuff down. And she's like, well, I'm too old. You know, I hear other people saying, oh, it's too late. I can't do this. Right. So
yeah.
It's never too late because, you know, she's still writing through you now. And
yeah.
And she's,
well, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, she's encouraging you to use your gift and you're trying to get her wisdom out. And this is exactly what happens.
And I came to realize that, you know, this team, this spiritual team, her main teaching was, you are not alone. You're not even functioning as one person. Nobody mm-hmm. is, because you are a member of a team. And that spiritual team is close to you as breathing. And that we are like a representative, you know, of our team. It doesn't mean we're the only one here and that all of our team is on the other side, you know. There are many members of our team right here on Earth, and we're all working, connecting, and have a particular role in each other. Some of us very, you know, intensely, and some of us will never physically meet, you know, we're across the world from each other, but we're affecting each other. But, you know, we still are a representative of our team, which to me is just such a powerful concept. Mm-hmm. But what I came to realize was that the team saw this opportunity. First of all, the opportunity came because of the asking of humanity for this. It would not be presented if there wasn't a collective spiritual asking for mm-hmm. the material. In fact, it's true of anything that comes out. Mm. And then, you know, supply and demand, if you want to call it that. You know, if nobody wants to buy the drugs are not going to be sold, are they, or supplied. So it works on with negative, difficult things, and it works for spiritual matters, too. It's supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
Then the team was able to see that there was a calling in the world for this book. Mm-hmm. And that they had a person who had this very fresh connection to someone who had passed, who was able to teach it, and someone who was able to, was primed to receive it, because I was, you know, in a state of grief and missing my mother. And because I was very suspicious, to be honest, of, not suspicious, but cautious. I heard, you know, some stories of people tapping into things that were mischievous or things of that nature. And mm-hmm. I wanted to protect myself, and I didn't want to be channeling or a part of anything that might come through that wasn't pure. Mm-hmm. So I trusted my mother and I trusted her voice. And that's why book one was 100% my mother. Then I became aware as we went along, particularly in book two, some of it felt and sounded like my mother. And then other teammates came in. There's chapters that speak of, all through the books, there's chapters that speak of scientific things or medical things or quantum ideas that I'm simply not educated in. Hmm. So these were part of teammates that had that wisdom, but my mother was the main. I knew she was at the helm.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, one thing about the books for me, and like I said, it really changed my life and just how I even look at my life. I mean, just totally fundamentally, because I'd heard the concept of angels and guides and stuff like that, but it's still kind of like you're the star of your own story, right? We are the person that's here, and they're there to help us. You know, the angels and guides are there just to kind of help us on. They're almost like they're servants in a way. And this book, or these books, made me feel like, no, we're all part of a team. We're all equal members of the team. I just happen to be the one at this moment that's in the trenches, but I'm not the star of the show.
Right. And the beautiful thing about that is everything that you go through and learn, your team absorbs. Everybody doesn't have to go through everything and do everything to get the wisdom. And everything they've ever gone through, you will absorb. Everything, every bit of wisdom we attain becomes part of the team. And then teams teams are connected to other teams, and that's how all of it is spread out into the one. So, but for our human mind, the concept of a team and our belongingness is exactly what our human mind needs and can use the best. Yeah. If you think too far beyond, oh, well, that team's connected to that team, so, you know, it can boggle the mind. But yes, we're not the star. We are a piece of the puzzle, and we are a representative.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. It's an exciting concept. I agree.
It really is. And it answers to me so many questions because I've worked with a client who was like elderly and was alone and everybody else was on the other side. And they're like, why am I still here? Why am I going through this? And what I explained to her is that this is not just for you. You know, what we go through is not just for us. And for me, it just opens up so much more possibility as to why am I going through this? And when I think about it, it's not just for me, it's for the other people. So maybe they don't have to go through it.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey there, something I want to tell you about today. My podcast platform, Buzzsprout, has recently made it easier for me to allow you to support me financially. Go to www.grieftogrowth.com/subscribe. That's grief2growth.com/subscribe. And once you're there, you can sign up to support me financially. Now, you can do it for as little as $3 a month or, of course, as much as you'd like. If you do that, you'll get access to bonus episodes, and you'll see those in the regular feed. They'll have a lock on them. But when you become a subscriber, you'll actually get access to your own private feed, and you'll be able to listen to the regular podcast along with the bonus podcast for the subscribers. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for sharing the podcast. And I want to thank those of you who support me financially. Have a great day, and on to the episode.
Absolutely. You know, there's a reference somewhere, I think it's in book one, to how, you know, these simple analogies are given, but a stronger person may carry a heavy suitcase, you know, for someone at the airport. Mm-hmm. You know, as we're walking along, we may lift up a child who can't keep up the pace. We take on things for one another, just like we do in our daily lives. I mean, we do it with our families, our loved ones, our friends. You know, we just take it on, or we think, I'm just going to do that for them. They're overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, we spiritually accept certain experiences so that we can provide, you know, gain the wisdom and provide it to others, or to take it off another. And we take turns doing that. You said right now you're in the trenches. You know, we take turns being in the lookout tower, is mm-hmm. how she put it, or in mm-hmm. the trenches. Mm-hmm. So, and she always says neither position is superior or inferior to the other. We are simply looking at things from a different way. And so, yeah, if you're up in the lookout tower, you're able to see a lot farther and yell down to the ones below, you know, what you can see. So it really is a matter of being open to mm-hmm. signs and guidance and understanding that our team and beyond the team certainly can see the trajectory of things more than us. And she did say this book, one of the reasons, she said in book one, one of the reasons I am able to do this at this time is because it's an all hands on deck time for humanity. Hmm. So the need is there. And we had this fresh from the conference, so to speak.
Yeah.
And reporting back, and I was available and have a writing ability. Mm-hmm. So they just used that combination.
Yeah, I love the you know, it's funny because as you're saying this, I've read the books like 3 or 4 times, so I know all the analogies, and other people might be kind of a little bit lost, but there are some great analogies in there that I've just incorporated in my life, like this idea of like a representative, you know, from an organization going to a conference and representing the organization. That's kind of like what it's like when we come here. Yes. And so we've prepared while we're back at home, and we come here and we represent, and we're having some communications while we're there, but it's not a direct thing necessarily. And then we eventually go back. So it just changes our life, my life, into looking at I'm here for a while, and then I'm back there for a while, then I might be here for a while. And this idea of even our guardians or angels or whatever we want to call those people, a lot of times I think we look at it's kind of like that's a hierarchy. They're higher than we are. They just have, as your mother says, they just happen to be in a different position now, and will be in that position, you know, at another time, and they'll be in the trenches.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
And when you go into the trenches, I mean, we're talking about a military analogy here. If you're in mm-hmm. the trenches, you're a little bit below ground. Your vision is not as clear, and you're weighed down by all the gear and the uniform and the headset and the whatever's going on, the boots, the mm-hmm. boots.
Yeah.
So. And yet, if you don't have all that weighing you down, it isn't a superiority, but there is a superior ability to perceive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When we're free of that, of the boots. So,
yeah.
And I think angels are something different. You know, we're talking about our souls and the experiences of the soul throughout the universe. And one of those experiences is a human experience. But I believe angels are a different kind of entity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't just become angels.
Right, right.
You know, they're a different kind of being. And one thing she pointed out, and I always love this concept, I always talk about it because you talk about something that meant so much to you, it meant so much to me to learn that our soul has many aspects, just like our brain has these different areas for language, for math, for spatial relationships, whatever. So the soul has all these aspects. And there's only, I won't say how many, 1 or 5 or 10 aspects even connected to this human body. The other aspects of me and you and everyone are doing other things.
Yeah.
And because that's so, we are not stuck in a body. The body is inside the soul. You know, the soul is this vast creation. And it's like a person sitting on the side of the lake and sticks their toe in the water, their foot in the water. Part of us is in the water. Part of us is on the shore. And because that's true, these other aspects that are continue to be with our loved ones, you know?
Yeah. And I want to kind of reiterate what you said so people can keep up with that, because there is this upside down view, I think, that we have of, you know, we are a body with a soul, and our soul is like inside of our body. If we think of it at all. And again, a concept I've got from you, and I've also gotten from other places, because this truth comes up all over the place, is that our bodies are actually inside of our consciousness or inside of our souls. And there's just a small part of it that's here. And when you gave that analogy about sitting on the shore with your toe in the toe in the water is us in the body. Meanwhile, the rest of our soul is off doing other things. And it's so ironic, or so synchronous, I guess. Just this morning, I saw a medium that posted something, and he was explaining to people the way reality really is. And he said, the thing is, you know, people that are on the other side are telling me they're living multiple parallel lives, and they can get in a couple of lifetimes while you're still here. So, you know, you're thinking they're just in heaven, just relaxing or hanging out. They're still with you. You're still with them. And this is mind blowing stuff, but it'll really change your perspective on what your life is all about.
Yes, there's so much more going on. I mean, right this moment, all around me are all kinds of light rays that my human eyes can't see. I can't see ultraviolet rays and microwaves and radio waves. I can't see them, but they're here. And in the same way, there's all these colors around us, you know, that we can't see. We think it's blue, yellow, green. It isn't. There's so much more colors that the human eyes are not capable of seeing. The ears are not capable of hearing all the vibrations and sounds around us. So, you know, when we use this physical body, we only perceive what the body is able to perceive. Mm-hmm. And we automatically think, oh, this is it. This life is it. This death is it. This body is it. Even if we think I'm a soul, we don't think beyond our bodies. But other aspects of our soul have much greater vision. They have different kinds of bodies. And can even, we can, another aspect of our own self can be here on the earth in another location, associated, I don't like to say in another body, but associated with another body.
Mm-hmm.
And it points out in the books that scientists and inventors across the world will suddenly discover a piece of something and relay it to a scientist, you know, on this side of the world, and they put their information together and voila, they've got it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably another aspect of their own identity. So we are, it's so vast. And I think a lot of, speaking of grief, since that is a focus of your program, I think mm-hmm. a lot of our grief comes because we forget the vastness and we focus so much on the body that is yeah. used for that aspect of the soul. But if that body no longer exists, the aspect certainly exists, and other aspects of ourselves are with our loved one in other places.
Yeah.
So those that we grieve for and miss, I just remind myself, my body misses her body. My body misses his body. My soul is still united, and we're doing all kinds of fun and amazing things and having experiences and unity and closeness. In a dimension I cannot see, and I am still on assignment.
Yeah, and that what you said reminds me of another concept, and I share your concepts, all other concepts of your mother, all the time, because this idea that, you know, if I got it correctly, it's like when we are together, like you and I sitting here together, I use the word avatar. This is kind of like my avatar. So that means our souls are actually connected on the other side, and for us, in order for us to be doing this. So when my daughter Shayna, for example, was here, we were both in our avatars. We were connected here, but now we're still connected there. It's just my avatar is still here, and my consciousness is tied to this avatar. But I'm not missing her in a sense, because there's a greater aspect of me that's, we've never left each other.
Yes, we've never left. We've never left each other. The chapter where relationships abide.
Mm-hmm.
That's really describes that in great detail. I think it's book 3. I need to memorize. There's so many chapters and so many books, but I need to have memorized better where they are. But I think that's where it is.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, there's another teaching that I'm a little bit familiar with called A Course in Miracles. And,
yes. Yes.
And so as I read these books and I hear this concept, because it calls us basically like a dream. It's like we mistakenly think we're here, but we're really back at home. And that comes through the team books, you know, so clearly.
Yeah.
But
yes, it does.
Before we get started, I was asking you, and I'm going to get personal, but I was asking you, like, how are you doing? And you said you're having some health challenges, and we kind of started on that. But then you just kind of morphed into, you start, you know, you were reading, I guess, book 4, referring to book 4 this morning. And tell me how that affects how you feel about the challenges you're going through.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I'm having some physical challenges as the body ages. But today I started reading through book 4 to prepare for our interview, because like you, I'm a student of the books and I don't always read them and study them. I mean, I'm immersed in the mindset of it. But just like everybody else, you know, I get caught up in life and mm-hmm. forget some of these amazing concepts. So I started reading the first chapter called Your Sacred Life. And book 4 in particular says, please read the first seven chapters of this book before you go into the rest, because it lays a new kind of foundation. And it's, I was told then after that, you can jump around to different chapters like people like to, but please mm-hmm. focus on those first seven. But in Your Sacred Life, as I read it, I was just moved to tears, truly. I was wiping the tears off before I got on with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read just a small portion of it here to you, because book 4 is more confrontational, is how I would like to put it.
Mm.
It's a bit of more of a wake-up call and a shaking up of our thinking. So Your Sacred Life starts out this way. The sacredness of your life cannot be overemphasized. Not just my life, by the way, your mm-hmm. life, everyone's life. Be not cavalier about the phenomenal experience of human existence and the gifts you have been given. The gift of education, so you may read this book. The gift of speech, so you may share your light. The gift of friends, family, teachers, shelter, clothing, food, water, sunlight. The gift of mobility, the use of your hands and eyes, senses of smell and touch. Precious tools, so you might have all things available to you to evolve and assist others in their evolution. These are not random, ordinary things tossed into the mix of life for no purpose. Each one of them is a miracle in themselves. Wow. So, and of course, again, this is about all of us, because we all, if we are not mobile, we have some other ability. And she points that out. She says, the whole world has served you from the moment you were born. From infancy, you were sustained until you could sustain yourself. This is not accomplished by one person, but by many, most of whom you will never know. It took many to protect, guide, and educate you through childhood. You can't thank them because you weren't even aware of their care and protection. You were snatched from dangerous situations many times, even to the point of saving your life, but you cannot remember this. I mean, I think of any toddler, how many times this is done for them.
Right.
Okay, so I'm just skipping ahead a little. It's so intense, but how often do you stop to think that you have the ability to love because you were first loved? What are you doing with this love? What do you choose to view with your eyes and speak with your lips, to create with your imagination? How do you treat the people who are available to you for love and care? How do you interact with others? Whatever you say and do to another, you are doing to yourself, quite literally. All you put forth blends with the principles of earthiness and returns to you in unique conditions and solid forms, so you may have the honor of perceiving what is and isn't. Yes, seeing a returning ugliness is as great an honor as seeing a returning beauty. Learn to value all of it. So, I mean, this continues in this way. And one of her biggest things she points out is that everyone we meet who irritates, annoys, and angers us, people that we see that we don't approve of their philosophy of life or their behavior, these are our former selves, in essence. There is no one of us who at some time in our spiritual evolution was not just as ignorant, just as lost, just as angry. And someone saw the light in us, and someone inspired and nudged, and many actually along the way to bring us, if we have more peace, if we have more wisdom, never gloat in it, never have any arrogance, because anyone you see that doesn't have that kind of awareness, It's a mirror. It's a sample of who we once have been.
Exactly. We'll get back to Grief to Growth in just a few seconds. Did you know that Brian is an author and a life coach? If you're grieving or know someone who is grieving, his book, Grief to Growth, is a best-selling, easy-to-read book that might help you or someone you know. People work with Brian as a life coach to break through barriers and live their best lives. You can find out more about Brian and what he offers at www.grieftogrowth.com, www.grief2growth.com. If you'd like to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/grieftogrowth, www.patreon.com/grief2growth. To make a financial contribution. And now back to Grief to Growth.
Exactly. Yeah.
So a lot of it's about humility.
Yeah. And I think that is so beautiful. And as we were having our discussion again before we started recording, you know, I was asking you like how you're doing it. When we start, we do this. We start with our challenges. And I'm going through this, I'm going through that. We all do, because that's human, that's how our brains are programmed. But you read something like that from that chapter, and it really, and this is why it's so important. In my life, I've incorporated, since reading the books, a gratitude practice. So I try to wake up and focus on what are the good things that are going on. What do I have as opposed to what I don't have? And it's a conscious effort. But as you and I were talking, you know, your perspective has risen so much, because you started with, you know, I'm going through these challenges, but then you're like, but look at all the things that I have, and look at the abilities that I do still have. And it's priceless.
As you're saying, a little further in this chapter, it's about gratitude. And she says, do not be like so many who choose to complain about what they were not endowed with and shrug off what blessings they do have. You have before you at all times the option of cultivating a spirit of contentment or a spirit of bitterness, depending on how you regard and utilize your personal set of gifts. Remember, it is pride that fuels dissatisfaction and humble gratitude that fuels contentment.
Yeah.
I don't know. Chapter one of book four, so much more to it, really is a powerful thing. It's a shake up, wake up type of thing.
And you know, the thing is that people, I think, might think, oh, well, I'm supposed to have gratitude. Who am I supposed to be grateful for? And why should I do this? You know, and the thing is, it's just like forgiveness, because we tell people you should forgive, and they say, why should I do that? You know, I'm not trying to be a saint or whatever. The thing is, the gratitude is for us. It will change the way you view your life. It's not a matter of it being like a moral superiority thing, or, you know, some sort of a virtue, and other than it's a virtue that serves us. It's so incredible when you can start to think of things that way. And it's something that I'm working on. I'm not going to say that I'm there at all, but it's something that I actively practice, and I found that it's changed my life.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi there, I'm really excited to tell you about my latest ebook. It's 4 lessons that you can learn from the near-death experience without going through all the trouble of dying to learn them. I've been studying NDEs for several years now. I am completely convinced that not only are they 100% real, but that there's some very universal wisdom that we can get from the near-death experience. And I've distilled that down in this book into 4 short lessons. And I've also given you all the reasons why I believe the NDEs are absolutely real. So go to www.grieftogrowth.com/NDE lessons to pick it up for free. www.grief2growth.com/NDE lessons. I hope you enjoy it.
It says here, your life is as sacred when you're pulling the weeds as when you're meditating, when you're weeping as when you're laughing, when you're falling down as when you're getting back up. Because what makes it sacred is its transformative nature, the way it is part of the creation of reality, the way it is contributing to evolution. So we are contributing something at all times. We are creative beings. We cannot stop creating. If you sit perfectly still and don't even say a word, you're going to create with your thoughts. But most of the time we're doing. We are creating, speaking, interacting. We're creating. And of course, then some people create music and art and all kinds of things and buildings. And I mean, we are constantly creating, and that means we're constantly contributing to something. So we are contributing to these vibrational spheres. We've talked about these big balls of energy. We're contributing love to the love sphere, and we're contributing anger to the anger sphere. And then we draw from them. So when you go into a state of bliss, meditating or whatever, you are contributing, but drawing from the bliss of all meditators. And then when some people go into a terrible rage and do something they can't believe they did or said, it's because they've tuned in beyond their own anger into a vibrational sphere that contains all anger. So we can tap into tremendous balls of energy because we're always contributing.
Yeah.
And we're always pulling in.
Yeah. And that's another concept that was new to me. The spheres, I call them spheres of influence. I think you cut in the book called spheres of influence. That's what I remember anyway. There's these, and then they're not literal things, but I think they're concepts that, you know, we can contribute to these things and we can draw from them. And we can see this sometimes, like when we get angry, it's like it goes beyond us. It starts to spiral and it goes out of our control. And it's like we're being sucked in. And that's what this book is saying is happening.
Yeah.
We've tapped into something bigger than ourselves. It's actually drawing us in.
Yes. And people say it was a tidal wave. It was a tidal wave of rage. And I can't believe I did this horrible thing, some violent act or behavior. And just like somebody lifts a car off of a person in an accident, they have superhuman strength. I mean, it isn't just their strength. They're tapping into the strength and the rescue impulse of humanity that all have contributed to that particular ball of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we can. I talked to somebody recently, and he said he loves that idea, and that every morning when he wakes up, he deliberately visualizes this ball hanging over his bed, mm-hmm. and starts contributing to and pulling from it. You know, the love or patience or whatever he feels drawn to for that particular day.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, these things are all around us. We just can't see them with our human eyes. They're right. Very real. They're not like made up abstract ideas. They're truly there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say they're energetic. They're energetic things. And I love this. I love the idea of, again, I've been trying to do gratitude. I think that's so important. So I have a practice where I wake up in the morning. I'm like, my thing is at least three things, and it usually goes on for a while. I'm like, I have to stop now, because you can learn to be grateful for things. It's not natural because we take things for granted. I tell people, you know, until you're sick, you don't appreciate being well. My wife was sick for a week a little while ago. She got an infection, then she was on antibiotics. Her body didn't react well too. So for a week she was sick. And the day she felt better, she's like, I feel so great, you know? And so why not feel grateful when we're able to do things like take a walk like I did this morning, or be able to speak to you, you know, that's not a given.
Yeah. Truly, truly. And the funny thing about human nature is, you know, people set goals and they reach them and then they're not content with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then they set the next goal. And this can be harnessed in a good way. It can be, you know, we can say, okay, now I have the house I want. And rather than, you know, immediately, well, but I don't like this and I have to change that. And yes, we may remodel or do whatever, but,
mm-hmm.
but always, there's a chapter in there that talks about, when Jesus turned the fish to five and enough to feed 5,000,
mm-hmm.
and a boy gave him, I think, five fish. And it says Jesus blessed the fish, and mm-hmm. then turned them in. The key there is that he blessed the fish. He didn't say, this isn't enough, or this, what can I do with this? To bless what is, and to bless means to recognize the inherent value without comparing.
Mm.
Without comparing. The analogy is given of a dollar. If you start comparing a dollar, it's worthless. But if you just recognize a dollar is a dollar, and in and of itself, it is perfect. And then the other analogy that's absolutely perfect is when you have a newborn baby. This baby can't clean themselves. They can't walk. They can't do a thing for themselves. They make a lot of noise. And yet they're perfect. We don't immediately start comparing. Well, you know, when are they going to walk? Or we just look at this newborn and we just cherish, you know, she or he is enough.
Yeah.
And get the mindset of enough, not immediately a goal of, I need more added to that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you bless and recognize the inherent value of whatever it is, that's actually when you can turn it into 5,000 fish. Because if you just throw them down and say that's not enough, you undo the value, the inherent value of what's there. Anyway, yeah. Another tangent, but
no, I think that's beautiful. And I think it's perfect because I was speaking with someone the other day about, you know, the idea of just everything that happened supposed to happen, you know, or where we were supposed to be. And I said, whether it is or not, we are where we are. So we should learn to try to accept where we are. And when I say accept, I don't mean just tolerate it. Just like, okay, this is where everything in my life has led me to be, and have faith that this is where we're supposed to be. And then we can work on the future. You know, yes, we can work to make things better. Things in the world are not perfect. We like for things to be better. But first, I love that, bless what is. You know, look at the progress we've made, even as we're judging ourselves, because we're so hard on ourselves sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not where I need to be. I'm not who I need to be. But look how far you've come.
Yes. And you know what? Even if you haven't come far, even if you really are at the bottom and you are fed up with yourself and you feel like you let all your opportunities go and you've ruined your life, you know, I mean, even if you really are at that point, remember the most saintly being that you can imagine once was there. Mm-hmm. The when you see Michelangelo's beautiful works of art, you don't see all the times that he's slashed the canvas because he was so frustrated right. with his work, or threw it out, or said, I'm never going to paint again, and went and got drunk. You know, mm-hmm. you don't see it. And you meet people who are successful, whether you're talking about something spiritual tranquility, they seem to have attained a spiritual tranquility, or you meet people who have financial success, or any of the things that you're looking at that you wish you could have. They were not always that way.
Right.
The when you go hear a symphony, that those people were once little children playing Twinkle Star on that piano. So
right.
don't where you are is valuable. I don't care where you are. Right. Even if you're groveling in the mud, it is a valuable time, a valuable experience that will lead you. If and it's pride. All our self-loathing and our beating ourselves up is really a form of pride. Some yeah. people think it's a form of humility, but it isn't, because we're saying, I'm too good and I'm too important to make those mistakes. It's okay for Joe and Susie over there to make those mistakes, but I'm not supposed to do it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I think that's a really important concept. And I want to reiterate what you just said, because I think it's, you know, for people, I think we miss that. We think that beating ourselves up is a form of humility, where I'm pointing out my own faults and I'm saying, you know, I'm a terrible person because of this, there's that. And it's exactly the opposite. It's a form of pride, because we're saying, I'm too good for this. I should not make, someone else could make those kind of mistakes, but not me, because I'm too good for that. So we need to let that go. We need to just say, I'm where I'm supposed to be. And that mm-hmm. there are people, if you want to compare, there are people that are infinitely ahead of you and there are people that are infinitely behind you.
Yes.
So there is no comparison when we really grasp that concept that we're never going to be a quote advanced being, because there's always going to be somebody more advanced than us.
Yes.
But we're also not at the very bottom. There's always going to be someone that's worse than we are also. And, yes. and accept where it is that we are and go forward from there. I think it's so important.
And some of the difficulties and burdens that we carry, we may actually have agreed to carry for our team. Mm. Some people have very, very painful lives that have a series of heartaches. And others seem to have lives that, even though I would say even the best of lives, you know, has heartache and
they
loss.
Do. Yeah.
You know, you see people, you don't know what's going on
right.
throughout their life. So there are reasons. And yes, if we can be humble and say, I'm like everybody else, I can be, you know, obstinate and angry, and I can be addictive, and I can be a failure just like anybody else. Mm-hmm. And that marvelous saintly accomplished person over there once was in this state. We're all one. We're all doing it together. And try to strive for that humility that can bring you peace. And you can move up and you can move on. What keeps us down more than anything is that self-criticism.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, wow, that's really profound. So we've talked about some of the concepts in the books. Are there any other concepts in book four particularly that you wanted to bring out?
Yes, there's a chapter called Holy Creative Power. And again, it's talking about that we are these creative beings. Mm-hmm. And it asks the question, do you have any doubt whatsoever that you have the power to create chaos, negativity, or pain in your immediate environment right this moment? Mm. The question is not asking, do you want to do that? But do you see that you have the option to do so with your voice? You can speak unkind words right this moment. We could choose to do that. We could choose to pick something up and smash it and break it. We could run out in the garden and pull up all the flowers. We have that ability. Mm. And then it says, the truth, as unnatural as all this may sound, the truth is there's never a time that the option to act destructively is not available to you. Sit with this for a moment and absorb the impact of what we're saying. The only thing stopping you from behaving in this manner is you and you alone. You are in charge of the choice. You are choosing not to speak or act in that fashion. Mm-hmm. Now, why is it so difficult for people, if we can all agree on that, we have no doubt that we have the power to destroy and to cause harm. Why do we then, why are we so resistant to the idea that we can also create marvelous, wonderful things? The same voice box that can harm someone with cruel words is the same voice box I'm using right now to try to speak about light and love. So I'm trying to find that one. Do you sense a hesitation in yourself when you consider this in comparison, consider the fact that you can create beautiful things, mm-hmm, in comparison to the absolute certainty you feel when you looked at your power to behave violently? Why is it easier to acknowledge your ability to create chaos and pain than it is to acknowledge your ability to create peace, joy, and harmony? So I just think, I talk to people sometime about who are depressed or having these kinds of issues, and I try to point this out because the life they're living that they find so miserable is one they have created or agreed with others to participate in some way, shape, or form. And yet they just say, I can't do any different. I don't know how to change it. I don't know how to build a new life. I don't. And yet if you make somebody think, well, do you have the hands to go smash everything? Yes. Do you have the voice to do this? Yes. Mm-hmm. Use the same hands in a different way. Use the voice in a different way, because we always have both options before us.
Right. Well, I would even go beyond that. I think a lot of us are doing a lot more good than we give ourselves credit for. I find a lot of times people who are depressed saying, I'm of no value. I'll point out to the, well, are you a parent? Well, yeah, I have kids. Are you raising your children? Are you taking care of them? Are you loving? Well, yes, I am. Well, that's a lot. I saw a comic the other day. It was so simple, but it was so profound. It was just two panels. And the first panel was a guy just pouring like some water into a bowl who's standing on a rooftop. And he was saying, I'm just a worthless person. I don't really serve anybody. I'm no good. The next panel is two pigeons and they're sitting there at the water. And one pigeon goes, thank God that someone put this water out. And the other one goes, yeah, I was so thirsty. I wonder who did this. And a lot of times we just don't give ourselves, you know, the credit for the things we do in the world that we consider the little things that might be life-changing to someone else.
This is so, so, so true. Again, the vastness of the picture. We don't know why we're carrying a burden. We don't know the trickle down effect exactly he did of our simple efforts. I mean, we don't have to go, we don't have to do enormous, marvelous things in this world to contribute light. And I think that's where people forget. They don't realize if they sit on the porch and just radiate love to the neighbors as they walk by, they are contributing. And contributing something very, very valuable. They don't have to feel that it's required to enter the mainstream of life and do some phenomenal thing or read about people who do these amazing things. That's not the path for everyone.
Right. Well, and that goes back to the spheres of influence, right? If I sit on the porch and I'm radiating love and I have the intention of contributing to that sphere of influence, then that is an act of creativity, as you said. That's an act of raising the vibration of all of us.
It is. And when you think about it, I mean, some of the very devout meditators, monks, nuns of different Buddhists of all religions, cloistered people who live very introverted lives, and some people choose to simply pray all the time. Yeah. They stay to themselves, they meditate, they pray, they don't go out into the world. And I'm not saying that's needed. I'm just saying that is a path that is chosen that has incredible value. And then you have leaders who people whose destiny is to stand up and be a world leader and to work from that platform. So it's just infinite the number of ways there are to live on this earth.
Right.
And they all have value. We can make them valuable.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And we'll sit as humans and we'll rank them and say, well, this is more valuable than the other. But it's not true from the spiritual perspective. It's simply not true. We're running out of time. I want to get to a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. Now, it's been about 10 years, I think, since you wrote the team books. So what's it like for you now in terms of, are you still hearing from your mother? Is that channel still open?
You know, it isn't open in the same way. It isn't open in this constant bombardment of information because they really took advantage of that first year and a half, which is the team did to get this written. And then I released the books over the coming years. So it isn't necessary for that to go on. When I read the information or speak about it, I'm fully aware of her presence and I'm fully aware of the team. There are events and moments throughout my life where I do feel guidance and communication directly from her. Now and then I've heard a direction or her voice, but it isn't necessary. And so it doesn't occur in the same manner. If it ever is needed, I'm sure it could happen again.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent answer. And I think to broaden that out to everybody else, because I know sometimes when our loved ones pass, people will feel like, oh, I feel them close, you know, now, and then now they're gone. It's not the same. Do they not care about me as much anymore? And I love what you just said, because that's what I tell people. I'm like, I think we get what we need. I always go back to that Rolling Stones song. You can't always get what you want, but I think we get what we need, and it's not necessary anymore. So people might say, "Oh, well, Frankie, don't you miss that?" But it's, you know, that's just not what's meant to be right now.
You know, I have to tell you, at one time when I could feel it kind of fading away, and I went through a feeling of some loss and grief, and I really did. And I sat with that kind of thing. And I finally came to a place where I was able to say, if this never happens again, this wasn't about me. It was to get these books here. And I accept that. And I'm grateful for what happened. And I release all my clinging to the need for that. And it was tough kind of to do that, but I really did. And then not long after that, just a few months, I was asked to sing a song I wrote called Instrument of Peace about St. Francis of Assisi's prayer. Mm-hmm. And I had to go out of town to do it. And I sang it and spoke about it at this place. And I went to a little meditation room afterwards that they had there. And I had the most profound spiritual experience out of almost all of what I've described.
Hmm.
Not communicating with my mother, mm-hmm. but the top of my head opened up, and it was like the top of the room opened up, and I went straight out into the galaxy. It was a complete out of body into the entire glorious galaxy.
Hmm.
I didn't ask for it. I was shocked by it, but I was propelled out there. And I knew it was because I had released my clinging, desperate need, you know, to hear or see any of that again.
Wow.
It couldn't have happened. I knew it when I came back to Earth. I knew that's why it had happened.
Wow.
So I think if we can just know, Even if we just let things go, because there's no time, but there's going to be an earthly time where we might feel a lack of communication or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it will. Nothing's ever gone, not really. So it will return in its own way, in its own time, and not cling to that.
Yeah. Wow, that's wow. I'd like to end on that, but I do want to ask you one more question.
Yeah.
I know you're working on a novel, and I want to hear about your novel, and because there's some team concepts in the novel. So tell me about that.
Yes, two things that are going on. I and two other women are narrating the books, and so we're working on book one. So that'll be coming out. It'll probably be a good 3 or 4 months before that's ready. And then we hope to do the other books, narrate the other books too. But the novel was written actually over the course of about a year, and it's been finished for about a year, and I keep editing it. But it deals with the Strands of Possibility chapter and the Present Past chapter in book four, which talks about time. We see time this way when time is actually this way, and that everything really is happening at one time, but when we're on in a connected to our body, we see it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so these simultaneous events occur in this book, and the awareness, the concept that's used is that our evolving awareness and spiritual growth takes us to a new level, and we shoot out, we drop a ripple into time, so to speak. But when you drop a ripple, it goes in all directions. It doesn't go just forward. We think, oh, I've done something. It's affecting my future.
Mm-hmm.
It's the idea that I've done something and it's affecting the past. It goes out in all directions. So the events in this story of two women, one in World War II and one a modern woman, they are in separate timelines, but they're really not.
Wow.
And their decisions alter the past and the future for each of them.
Wow.
It's hard to describe. So I'm trying to get it published with a publisher, and if it doesn't happen, I'll self-publish it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably later this year.
That sounds fantastic. It sounds these concepts are, they're simple, but they're profound and they're mind-boggling, you know, and it's something, that's why I've read the books, I don't know, 3 or 4 times now, and I'll probably read them again really shortly, because every time you read them, you kind of go like another layer deeper, and you can start to kind of apply the things to your life in terms of like, yeah, the idea of impacting our past. We all think time is linear and time moves in one direction, but again, this is not a unique concept to the team books. Physicists tell us this. They're like, you know, there's no such thing as time. Einstein said time is an illusion. It's a persistent illusion, but it's an illusion. It's something that our brains kind of generate. And once we can start to understand that, it just changes everything about our lives.
Yes. I'm going to read one little short paragraph to end with, okay?
Yeah, it'd be great. It's
out of that chapter. To be very clear, what you call the past is continuously being rewritten by the present, not once, but instant by instant. There's actually no past in existence as you remember it to be, because the wisdom you have gained today has reached back through the portals of time and literally transformed past events, rendering them equal in quality to your present state of understanding. In other words, the vibration of a past event is raised, causing the original event to transmute into an event equivalent to your new perspective. And it's definitely mind-boggling and takes some time. And that's why I wrote the novel, which is called The Train to Hofhausen, a German town I made up. The Train to Hofhausen is the name of it. And I wrote it to help people see how that might work in real life.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait for it to come out. When it does, let me know, and I'll have to have you back on to talk about about that. Because sometimes analogies and fiction, this is why when I watch movies, like I think about the movie The Matrix. I mean, that to me is just so mind-blowing. And these guys wrote it. And I'll say to people, there's certain things I think were channeled. I mean, I don't know if those guys even had that in them. I think that was channeled from somewhere else. And there's music that comes through, and we'll listen to a song that'll give us a very deep concept in like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, that reaches in or touches our hearts. So I'm looking forward to that novel coming out. Yeah. Well, Frankie, again, it's been really an honor to have you on. Thank you for doing this. I want to let people know, where can they reach you to find out more about the books or about you or anything else?
Everything's on the website, The Team Books with the S, theteambooks.com. And I also have a personal website that links to that and to other projects I've done, which is my name, francisquees.net. And it's FRANCES, not IS, francisquees.net. So those two websites. And you're welcome to write to me. I write people back. I'm just right here if anybody wants to connect.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for doing this again. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for listening to Grief to Growth. Brian hopes that you find this episode helpful and will come back for future episodes. Brian's best-selling book, Grief to Growth, Planted Not Buried, is a great resource for anyone who is coping with grief or knows someone who is. If you enjoy the podcast and would like to support it, there are three things you can do to help. The first is to share the podcast with someone that you think it will help. The second is to go to iTunes, rate, and review the episode. The third way you can support the podcast is by becoming a patron. Head over to www.patreon.com/grief2growth. That's patreon.com/grief, the number 2, growth, and sign up to make a small monthly donation. Patrons get access to exclusive bonus content and knowledge that you are helping to spread the message of grief to growth. For more about Brian and Grief to Growth, visit www.grief2growth.com.
Hey there, if you liked this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you liked. If you didn't like this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you didn't like. Go to grieftogrowth.com/community and look for Talk About the Podcast. I'll see you there.